and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. A federal judge puts a 14-day pause on President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
For a judge at a temporary restraining order to say blatantly unconstitutional, it is worth emphasizing that you don't typically see that type of language at this initial stage.
Pete Hegseth's nomination to lead the Pentagon narrowly advances in the Senate, clearing the way for a final confirmation vote. Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
Is this man with a known history of excessive drinking, the guy you want at the other end of the phone at 2 a.m. in a crisis, in control of the nuclear codes?
OxyContin makers, the Sackler family, and Purdue Pharma reach a $7.4 billion settlement with 15 states for fueling the opioid crisis. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
If you add other opioid manufacturers and pharmacies to the mix, all these lawsuits combined resulted in $50 billion in settlements.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Alyssa Kay. The Auburndale School District and others are adding their voice to the plea to do something about the intersection of Highway 10 and Highway 186. In the letter to the Department of Transportation, district staff state that many of the accidents which happen at that intersection involve younger, inexperienced drivers. The intersection is also the busiest crossing for those who travel from Arpen, Vesper, or Wisconsin Rapids north to Marshfield and beyond. The letter also states that since the redesign of Highway 10 to four lanes, the Highway 10, Highway 186 intersection is the only state highway intersection that does not have some safety structure, convenience, or concern at an intersection. They're requesting safety measures be put in place to allow traffic to cross over or under the 65-mile-per-hour traffic on Highway 10. The FDA has ruled cranberries can be labeled healthy, Savannah Tomei Olson reports.
The FDA had proposed a new rule where producers couldn't label cranberries healthy because sugar is added to make them palatable. Senators Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson, plus other Wisconsin lawmakers, started advocating for a change to that rule. Now, 2 years later, the FDA agreed. They amended the rule to say that cranberries can still count as healthy as long as they don't have more sugar than other comparable fruits have naturally.
A death investigation this summer in the town of Adams has now been closed. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office received a report on June 30th with the caller saying they had found someone in a home deceased. When deputies arrived, they found one person dead from an apparent gunshot wound. The 34-year-old man has been identified as Christopher Danielson. Investigators processed the scene and found no one else was involved in the death. The Sheriff's Office will not be recommending criminal charges at this time. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
It's the Bucks and the Heat. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks flew back today after getting snowed out in New Orleans last night. Their game against the Pelicans to be rescheduled. Tonight, they're at home against the Miami Heat. The Bucks have 13 games left before the All-Star break, 9 of them on the road. At 24-17, can they hold on to that fourth place spot in the East? Damian Lillard.
We got to be there mentally. You know, we got to be engaged. We got to be disciplined, and we got to be together.
NFL former Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson held his first press conference as the new head coach of the Chicago Bears.
I've got tremendous amount of respect for the coaches and the players in this league. Haven't competed against them for the last 6 years. Dan Campbell, Kevin O'Connell, you're talking about two guys that are up for Coach of the Year awards as the season ends here. And to be quite frank with you, I kind of enjoyed beating Matt LaFleur twice a year.
That's the Bears' Ben Johnson with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear for tonight, a low close to 5 below. Clouds return for tomorrow, some flurries and snow showers in the afternoon and evening. High near 20. Mostly cloudy, breezy, scattered flurries Saturday. High upper 20s. Currently it's 6.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Seems everywhere in this state, housing has just gotten so expensive. Our current president ran on promises to help the middle class, and I'd like to know what he's going to do about the housing shortages. I went through the executive orders. I read through the speech transcript a couple of times. Nothing he really said or did in the first couple days has anything to do with helping the middle class.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
What's worse, fast drivers or slow drivers? Karina listening on WAUK in Milwaukee.
Slow drivers are the worst. They think too slow. They stop in the middle of the highway to think about where they're going. Maybe they need to turn left and right. They're changing lines for, oh my God, I can do all day long.
Karina,
can you
tell us what you really think?
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer will be here from the recombobulation area. Elon Musk, all concerned about Wisconsin Supreme Court. What does that mean? We'll talk about it. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. Locally grown radio, WFHR. Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. And now, a guy still not convinced computers are here to stay, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Kicking off hour number two of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, broadcasting live statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay on a gorgeous winter night. Great to have you with me. Bring the whole family in and gather around the radio and let's stay warm and just have some laughs and talk about museums. And we've got a filmmaker coming at 7:20 to talk about her documentary that will make its world premiere at the Door County Film Festival. We haven't even talked about Oscar nominations yet because of these people in Mississippi trying to pass laws that will never be enforced. But right now, Greg Vadney is here. He made the popcorn pick of the week, and we kept him here a little longer, past his bedtime.
No problem
at all.
Because
we want to talk about really cool stuff. Greg is the executive director of the Rahr West Museum in Manitowoc. They are celebrating their 75th year, which is incredible. You said you've been there 13 years.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about what's happening in its 75th year.
So all year long, we're going to be doing celebrations of this 75 years. We have, for people who don't know, the museum encompasses a historic house, the Vilas Rahr Mansion. We've got multiple galleries that have been built off of the mansion. And we are also the spot, as you well know, of the crash landing in 1962 of the Sputnik 4 spacecraft. So there's a bunch of things that go on at the Rahr West. But the first kind of kickoff we're having is on Saturday, February 8th. It is an all-day open house event to, one, celebrate that we are into the 75th year, and then, two, we unveil brand new exhibits in that historic mansion. So the historic mansion during the holidays is decked out for Christmas, right? We have our Christmas in the mansion. There are Christmas trees everywhere. So we shut that down early January. Then you got to clean up a bunch of pine needles and a bunch of like the ornaments and all that stuff, and then set up brand new exhibits. And all of the exhibits on the first and second floor of the mansion, we're talking about seven different rooms worth of exhibit areas, will all be tied together with this loose tie of our 75th anniversary.
Okay. A big undertaking, and it looks like, I mean, I was just looking through your website before, all the stuff you have lined up. So for the 8th,
yep,
you've got a scavenger hunt.
Yes, all day long.
You've got a tour of the museum
that I'm doing.
Oh, nice.
The tour is with me. So we have, oh my gosh, we have done so many hours of research on the history of our place. We were talking about Argo historical drama. I got some historical drama. Like through the years, things were iffy in a few years.
Really?
There was like a crumbling building. There were accusations of impropriety. There was stolen artwork through the years. We're going to talk a lot about those. I got so many nuggets of trivia. I can't wait to share.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
That I'm going to be hosting beginning at 11:30 a.m. And we'll walk through the mansion and we'll talk about the history of this joint.
That sounds like a blast.
Yeah.
So the scavenger hunt, I would guess, is like mostly for kids or?
That's how we originally designed it, but I know a lot of adults who go crazy for it.
The same ones that want to go in the bounce house, probably.
Could be.
Yeah. We'll see.
Could be. I don't make any judgment.
Yeah.
Come on,
hey,
man.
You want to bounce, bounce.
Yeah, you do your thing.
That's what it's there for. Just don't crash into the kids.
Exactly.
I love this. You have Art of Conversation with Laura Bickford at 1 p.m. Conversation, yeah. First of all, is an art.
Absolutely.
You have to listen. Then you talk. Like, whenever we would have these crazy conversations at our dinner table, I would always tell my wife and kids, whoa, conversation is an art. And they would get so sick of me saying that. I hope it stuck with them. But tell us what that is. That sounds like a lot of fun.
So Laura Bickford is a curator at the John Michael Kohler Art Center down in Sheboygan. John Michael Kohler, if you've never been to their place, and we're both, John Michael Kohler and the RAR West are part of Wisconsin Art Destinations, which are a group of 13 different museums, art museums and art facilities around the state that all do collaborative advertising together. So I got to give them a plug.
Absolutely.
But John Michael Kohler, very dedicated to self-trained artists. And we happen to have an exhibit of a self-trained artist from Manitowoc by the name of Rudy Rotter that's up right now. The exhibit is called Essential Creativity. You don't have to wait until February 8th to see that exhibit. That exhibit is ongoing. And Rudy was self-trained. More so than, like, you think of a self-trained or an outsider artist as being somebody who does some, you know, just kind of stuff, weird stuff on the side. Rudy at one point in time had a gallery that in New York that sold his artwork. He just happened to not do that as his major profession. He was a dentist in Manitowoc.
Oh, wow.
But he also, I mean, he was wildly creative and created a huge volume of artwork. Many of his art pieces, actually, he used kind of cast-offs from some of the foundries and the metal workshops in Manitowoc and then created sculpture out of them.
I thought you were going to say made braces out of them, but okay.
I don't know. Maybe if they didn't work as a brace, as braces or some headgear for his patients.
Sure.
He was like, yeah, I could probably make a sculpture out of this thing. So we have that exhibit up, and Laura will be coming and talking about these self-trained artists throughout Wisconsin and specifically about Rudy. We've got great exhibits, like I said, that are all interconnected about the history of the museum and the things that we have done in Manitowoc for the last 75 years. And then we also do a quick create, which is essentially a drop-in class where people will be able to create a mini accordion sketchbook with the help of some of our arts educators and use that. We're inviting them to go right out into the galleries and do some sketching on your own or come back later and you can do some sketching. And also, you know, we're going to be doing a toast. We're going to celebrate because it's a big year for us. And like I said, last segment, you know, we had a huge year in 2024, and to be able to walk into our 75th on this high note, we are pumped. We've got our usual slate of wonderful exhibits, along with, I mean, at the end of the year, we're going to have a Keith Haring exhibit, which is really swinging for the fences for us. And then things that we do every year, like Sputnik Fest, are going to take on a little bit of a different twinge during this year. With it being the 75th anniversary, we're going to be talking probably a little bit more about that historic fact that happened at the RAR West in 1962.
Let me ask you, my guest is Greg Vadney. He is the executive director of the RAR West Museum in Manitowoc, joining me here in studio on Nightlight tonight. You have a Georgia O'Keeffe, which is 100 years old. How do you get stuff like that in a museum? Is there competition? Like, do you get into bidding wars, or is it
there
just
can come... be? I mean, for the quick answer is the reason why there's the name West in our museum is not for direction. It was a person, and that was Ruth West, primarily. Ruth and John West were great supporters of us. They owned the Manitowoc Company, which was Crane Company. It was a shipbuilding company before that. And Ruth West, in particular, had a great fondness for artwork. She was very involved in the museum during her life, and she, in her last year, purchased that George O'Keeffe painting, Birch and Pine Tree No. 2, which is celebrating its 100th year this year. That painting has had two owners. The people of Manitowoc, as I said.
Yeah, that's cool.
And before that, George O'Keeffe. Bought that from the O'Keeffe estate after George O'Keeffe passed away. George O'Keeffe had it at her home.
And that is really cool. Birch and Pine Tree
super story. And we're going to be talking about that because what a great other milestone with that celebrating 100 years. I don't know whether you call it a birthday for a painting, I know I'm the art museum guy. I should know. Is it a birthday? Is it an anniversary? What do you call it? I'm calling it a birthday.
Are kids in Manitowoc encouraged or schools to bring kids and expose them to museums?
Absolutely.
And all that. Okay.
Absolutely.
That's good.
And one of the major things we talk about is, like, you know, a lot of times you go to a larger museum and it's a very hands-off place. It's like,
yeah,
you can't get close to the art. You've got a security guard wandering around behind you. One of the things that we stress, and part of it is just because we're tiny, we don't have enough staff to be able to follow you around. But even if we did, I don't think we would do that, because I'm a big believer that you have to have intimate moments with the artwork.
Yeah.
You got to be physically with that art, and you got to have it be unencumbered by other people to be able to actually appreciate it, get into it, get near it, and absorb it. And one of the things we do with all of our art classes, whether they're adult art classes or young people art classes, is part of our art class is usually that exposure. You're either going into the exhibit for a period of time to look at what the masters had done, or we'll bring the artwork right into the classroom and show them.
That's really one
of the coolest things about being able to do arts education in a place where you have a collection that is, like I said, one of the best in the state.
Absolutely. All right, we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, Greg, so let's get my favorite thing. This is one of the coolest things I learned about Wisconsin since I've been back here, and I didn't know about it until I hosted this show, was Sputnik. And what happened? I mean, talk about a serendipitous, like, your location and the facility you have, and then with West and the art they brought. Yeah. And then, you got this Russian satellite that happened to fall to the Earth right in the intersection in front of your museum.
Like, God, it's great.
It's crazy.
It's great. It nearly landed in the museum.
Yeah.
And the museum was a museum. That's part of our history, right? The museum had been around for 12 years at that point.
That's
62.
Okay.
We're just
62.
Like settling in at that museum, and bam. Early morning hours, this thing crash lands.
Yeah. For people that haven't, that don't know the story, tell them, because I just learned about it.
Quick hit story.
All right.
So, 1960, Sputnik 4 is sent up. This is not the original, like, ball with the antenna coming off.
Yeah.
This is a few iterations after that. It's sent up 1960. Almost immediately, the Russians lose control of the spacecraft. So it ends up being in an orbit. And it's just a natural orbit for 2 years. And then it starts to fall. Now, U.S. government, Russian government, and even some amateur astronomers know that it's going to fall, but the people of Manitowoc don't know about it. Right. Nobody told us. And they knew it would fall somewhere in the Midwest, but you can't really pinpoint something like that.
Yeah.
It's a, like, free fall. It's a natural descent out of through the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So most of the ship burned up. It wasn't that big to begin with. And the largest recovered piece was found in the street directly in front of the museum by two police officers. The morning of September the 5th, 1962. So,
was it, like, literally smoking, or?
It was.
Jeez.
That's the deal.
And you have a really unassuming little monument to it. Like, I was expecting the shrine. No, it's
a little steel ring
in the street.
If I can, I'll redo that, and we'll do something.
I think it's
huge.
Spectacular.
Honestly, I'd love to have, like, some sort of a catwalk over the top of it, because so many people run out in the street to take selfies.
Oh, right.
It's kind of a danger, because the thing's dead center in the middle of North 8th Street in Manitowoc.
It's a great thing.
It's just another unbelievable element of our 75-year history at the RAR West. And we're going to be celebrating it all year long. If I can give a plug, our website is rarwestartmuseum.org. You'll find out about Sputnik, about our 75-year history, and about everything that's going on.
You got to check it out. It's well worth the trip. Greg, thank you so much for making the pick and sharing all this information with us.
It's always a pleasure.
All right, Greg Badney. We'll be right back with Kate Stapleton, a documentary filmmaker.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
The IRS is ramping up collection, and if you owe back taxes or have years of unfiled tax returns, listen carefully. Before it's too late, check your eligibility for the Fresh Start program still offered by the IRS to reduce or even eliminate your tax problems. Call our special hotline number now and find out in minutes if you qualify for these life-changing debt reduction programs. Business or personal, if you're in a payment plan with no end in sight, have unfiled tax returns, under audit, have a wage or bank levy, or finally just want to know your options, Call the experts at Republic Tax Relief and stop collections immediately. A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau with a 5-star rating from Yelp, this veteran-owned company has the fight you need to take on the IRS. Don't go at it alone. Call their hotline number now, 800-491-8606. That's 800-491-8606. Find out if you qualify today. Call 800-491-8606 or go to republictaxrelief.com.
Have you made New Year's resolutions such as exercising more or learning a new skill? Why not add some financial resolutions? For starters, try to reduce your debt load. You'll improve your cash flow and have more to invest. See whether you can boost your pre-tax contributions to your traditional IRA and 401k. Once you're 50, you can even make catch-up contributions. If you have an education goal, consider investing in a tax-advantaged 529 education savings plan. Also, try to build an emergency fund containing up to 6 months' worth of living expenses, with the money kept in a liquid, low-risk account. Finally, even if you're relatively young, it's good to have your estate plans in order. And if you've already created these plans, you may want to review them, especially if you've had changes in your family situation involving marriage, divorce, or birth of children or grandchildren. You may not be able to tackle all these resolutions in 2025, but by addressing as many of them as possible, you can make progress towards your goals and set yourself on a positive course for the future. This is Clay Kanoki, your Edward Jones Financial Advisor, at 715-421-0958. Member SIPC.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Down, down, down. Come on! We go twister, we
go out before night. Just like, Craig was here, and I'm talking to him, and I'm like, oh, I don't even need my glasses. Maybe my eyes are getting better. And then he leaves, and I look at my questions for Kate. I'm like, God, I need my glasses. It's dark. It's very simple. I have the lights off in the studio, and that makes it harder to see. And you just made it worse. That's all right, though. Hey, welcome back. This is Nightlight. We are barreling through hour number two here on a Thursday night, the Christmas Eve of weeknights. As I don't know, you think that's going to catch on?
I don't know. Maybe.
Never know. We gotta be known for something other than tomfoolery every night. And, you know, this new law in Mississippi, I feel like we had some fun with it, but now, you know, then there's a minor in the studio with his dad, and now we've got a very distinguished filmmaker on, so I feel like I can't make those kind of jokes. So tomorrow, you have to remind me tomorrow, Conrad.
Okay.
All right. Hey, this is fun. We have a filmmaker about to join us here on the show. She has a film she made called The Inner Sea, and it premieres, worldwide premiere, at the Door County Film Festival. I want to say mid-February, I think February 13th, if I remember correctly, or the 15th, maybe. But she joins us now on the stream all the way from beautiful Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Kate Stapleton. Kate, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And how are things in Pittsburgh tonight?
It's great. It's winter. We're having a real winter. It's like we stole it from Wisconsin. We have all the snow. It's here.
Really?
It's been snowy nonstop for the whole past month and a half, pretty much. So I'm happy as a Wisconsinite. I feel sort of rejuvenated by having constant snow and sub-zero temperatures. I don't know how everyone else feels. There's ice on the rivers, so it's great. It's a beautiful time to be in Pittsburgh.
I would send you the rest of the winter if I could. I just don't have that power here, but I'm glad you're enjoying it. Tell us about your native Wisconsinite. Where did you grow up here?
I grew up near La Crosse, so up on the ridge in Dairy Country, so Middle Ridge specifically. It's got, okay, you know, a church and a bar and a couple houses and dairy farms. So real Wisconsin, classic Wisconsin spot.
Got all the bases covered. Church, bar, and dairy farms. What more do you need in life, really?
That's really it. I mean, we'd walk up and get milk from the bulk tank and, you know, walk home, stop at the church, stop at the bar at night. That's not when right. We were kids, but.
Well, maybe when you were kids. It is Wisconsin. You never know.
That was where the pop machine was. So, yeah, we had to go to the bar for the pop machine.
And now I know you're from Wisconsin for sure because you said pop machine. You called it pop. And which, you know what? Even in Wisconsin, you don't hear pop as much anymore. I made the transition. I called it soda or started to about 30 years ago because I was hearing pop less and less. So it was kind of refreshing to hear you say pop.
Yeah, I think that when at least when I think about my childhood, I wouldn't call it anything other than a pop machine.
Kate is like, I'm talking about pop and I want to talk about my film. Hey, let's jump into that. You made this really cool documentary It's going to premiere February 15th at the Northern Skies Gould Theater in Fish Creek, February 15th. Yes. It's such a great theater. Tell us about the movie and give us a background of what the movie's about first.
So the movie is a documentary. It's a music documentary. It's got stories. It's kind of a deconstructed modern Sound of Music, I guess. You've got a lot of children. There's traveling musicians. There's a giant 40-foot long bright blue school bus. And it's a love story, but it's a love story about music and about adoption. So that's kind of the general pitch for it.
All right. And it was interesting. I watched a big part of the movie earlier today. Talk about the adoption angle. That fascinated me because that's kind of how the movie starts off, is you talking about a baby you gave up for adoption without giving too much of the movie away. What was that like going through that?
Yeah, I mean, I placed a child for adoption when I was 21. And that's a huge part about what the movie is about. I don't know if there are any other movies. As far as I've seen, there aren't any other movies made by women who have made that decision. I think you don't tend to make that decision unless you are really, you don't have a lot of power, you don't have economic power, you're lacking something, you're lacking education, you're lacking resources. And it's a decision that has a lot of shame connected to it. So for me to talk about my story, but within the context of the life I have now, I'm a touring musician. I have six children. My husband and I have six children together. Yeah. So the adoption has always been an open adoption. And so I've always had a relationship with the family who raised my daughter. She grew up in California, so long way from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But she ended up coming to college near where I live now in Pittsburgh. And she is also a musician. So when I started to look at telling the story, I wanted to approach it from the music angle as well, kind of weaving the story together with music, because that's so much a part of our life and it's always been a part of our connection. And it's really special for us to premiere the movie on the coast of Lake Michigan, because the movie kind of begins with me, you know, talking about my experience of being 21 years old and not having an idea what was going to happen over the rest of my lifetime and not being able to imagine that. And I thought about that every night. I was staying with my grandmother in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. So I was right along the coast of Lake Michigan. And the story for me really starts standing on the edge of Lake Michigan, wondering what's going to happen. So being able to come back to that same stretch, that same coastline of Lake Michigan, and to continue this story by premiering the film there is just, I couldn't imagine a better place for it.
I'm going to tell you something that really stuck with me while I was watching this. And it's kind of a compliment to you as someone who was pregnant and did everything they could to make sure that this baby developed over the 9 months. And you played music a lot and talked to it or her, as it ended up being. But you also...
I didn't know, so I was like the baby. I didn't know whether I was a girl or a boy, yeah. So.
But the care you took to make sure you had a healthy pregnancy and that the baby developed, knowing you were going to give it away for adoption anyway, somehow was duplicitous almost. I felt like, oh my God, that's so emotionally crazy. I don't know how you could have gotten through that. It's like an added layer of drama for something you really did. It was very impressive and a great element of the movie.
I think I talk a lot about, playing music. Playing music was a big part of, it was really connected to my adoption decision. I had this little harp that I'd gotten in high school, but I wasn't really playing it until I got pregnant. And when I was pregnant, I had this huge decision to make. You know, I was kind of in between. My relationship had just fallen apart and I didn't have a job. I was going to go do mission work actually, but I was trying to figure out what to do. But I started to play the harp at the same time I was contemplating adoption.
Hey, Kate, let's pick up right there with you playing the harp and then let's jump back into this after the news. Okay.
Absolutely.
I don't want to miss any of this. So, all right, Kate Stapleton is here. We're talking about her film, The Inner Sea. I'll tell you more about that after the news. This is Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Blood donations are needed to help protect the blood supply from the ongoing impact of severe winter weather and wildfires. The American Red Cross is encouraging donors of all blood types, particularly type O negative blood donors and those giving platelets, to help save lives this month. Severe winter weather causes cancellations, as have the California wildfires, leaving more than 12,000 blood and platelet donations uncollected in January. This puts a significant strain on the national blood supply. You can book a time to give blood or platelets by visiting redcrossblood.org or by calling 1-800-RED-CROSS. In Wisconsin Rapids, you can donate at the Southwood County YMCA on January 29th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Wisconsin's minimum wage will remain at $7.25 per hour and $2.33 per hour for tipped workers as residents see neighboring states implement increased wage floors. With the start of the new year, neighboring Minnesota, Illinois, and Michigan have announced increases to their minimum wages, including tipped workers. In Wisconsin, however, the minimum wage has not increased since 2009. U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics data also shows the 2009 minimum wage change would be equivalent to nearly $11 today if it kept up with inflation. If you have a smartphone, you can access ebooks and audiobooks through your local library with the Libby app. The Marshfield Public Library is having a Libby drop-in to answer all your questions and help you get it set up. It's January 29th at 6 p.m. in the Felker Room. You'll need your library card and the device of your choice to use Libby on. There's no cost, but if you like to use Kindle for reading, you'll also need your Amazon login information. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Oscar nominations came out yesterday. 10 movies were nominated for Best Picture. But in the Best Supporting Actor category, there were 5 nominees, including Yuri Borisov for Anora, Edward Norton for his role opposite Timothy Chalamet in the Bob Dylan biopic A Complete Unknown, Guy Pearce was nominated for his role in The Brutalist, Kieran Culkin for the comedy drama A Real Pain, and his Succession co-star Jeremy Strong drew a nomination for his part in The Apprentice. A Complete Unknown, The Brutalist, and Anora all drew Best Picture nominations as well. In the Best Supporting Actor category, it was more good news for A Complete Unknown, as Monica Barbaro was nominated, to no one's surprise. Ariana Grande got a nod for her role in the blockbuster Wicked. Felicity Jones for The Brutalist. Isabella Rossellini is up for her role in Conclave. And after showing her musical side, the Academy recognized Zoe Saldana for her role in Amelia Perez. Every film these actresses were in was also nominated for Best Picture. Nice job, girls. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear for tonight, a low close to 5 below. Clouds return for tomorrow, some flurries and snow showers in the afternoon and evening. High near 20. Mostly cloudy, breezy, scattered flurry Saturday. High upper 20s. Currently it's 4.
The Badgers.
Feeds Max, fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Fade.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts on a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
The Todd Allbus Show.
What's worse, fast drivers or slow drivers? Karina listening on WAUK in Milwaukee.
Slow drivers are the worst. They think too slow. They stop in the middle of the highway to think about where they're going. Maybe they need to turn left and right. They're changing lines for, oh my God, I can do all day long.
Karina?
Yes.
Can you tell us what you really think?
The Todd Allbus Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody. Big show on a Friday. Make sure to join us, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, former Wisconsin Badger Brady Ewing, and Peter Rapine of E-Bombs World. Be here.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2.
There's a problem with weather.
On Nightlight, we will have from the Doctors in Recital, Kim Shevchik. She will not be here live this time, but she has supplied us with some great music. And they have a big concert coming up this weekend. Kim will talk about that, and it's for a great cause. It's also a bar band Friday night, so Terry Barr will be here with new music and sparkling conversation. Hey, helping us light it up here at Nightlight every night now is the Appleton Cigar Company. What better company to help us light it up than a cigar company? They're on College Avenue. They've been serving the community for over 25 years. If you are a cigar aficionado or a first-timer even, and you're looking for one-of-a-kind experiences, you need to check out Appleton Cigar. They boast the largest selection of cigars north of Milwaukee with over 700 cigars to choose from and a walk-in humidor. The Cigar Lounge offers an impressive variety of spirits and cocktails that pair perfectly with a premium cigar. See, I wouldn't know what goes with what, so you really should stop by. Ask Norm for his help. He's a great guy. He's got a great staff. For the full experience, go to the Appleton Cigar Company. They are open every day from 11:30 a.m. to 10:30 p.m., Monday through Saturday. And for more information, go to appletoncigar.com. Right now, pardon me, we are talking documentary film, and my guest is Kate Stapleton. She made a film called The Inner Sea. It makes its worldwide premiere in Door County in just a couple of weeks at the Northern Sky Theater on February 15th. She is joining us on the stream from beautiful Pittsburgh. Kate, a native Wisconsinite, you were talking about playing the harp, and I was saying how impressed I was that you were doing it and taking such good care of this baby that was developing inside you, even though you knew you were giving it away for adoption. It was a very emotional kind of element to your film, I thought.
Yeah, it's a very emotional element to the story. And I think it gets lost a lot when the conversation happens about adoption. You can't be pregnant for 9 months without it profoundly changing you. You become a mother. And, you know, when you become a mother, you fall in love with your child. So that's a part of the story for women who have undergone this. And I think it's a part that often gets left out. Yeah. It's complicated. And sure, it's complicated to dive into it. But I think it's something that's important to include in that conversation.
Did you have moments throughout the pregnancy where you second-guessed yourself or you thought, I don't want to give this baby up, as it turns out?
I definitely went into it. I had no interest whatsoever in adoption when I was first pregnant. I think it was a decision that I came to in part with the father, with the birth father. You know, we were young, we knew we weren't going to be together. And it was really important for us to find two people who could love this child and love each other and support each other and create, you know, a stability that we couldn't provide at that time. I felt really confident that it was the right decision for my child. You know, I knew that it was going to be really hard for me, but I felt like in that moment as a mother, not being a mother was the most powerful thing that I could do.
Wow. That's interesting. All right, let me ask you this now, Kim. It's all done now. Pre-production, shooting, post-production, you're in a festival. When did you realize you wanted to make a movie about this? Because this must have come years later. You said you have six kids now. You guys are all traveling around in this huge bus. You're touring musicians. When did you get the idea to make this into a film, your story?
I still question whether I wanted to make a movie about this sometimes, but I think my husband's a teacher. He's a high school teacher during the year. So he deals with teenagers all the time. And he turned to me actually, you know, during the years where my daughter, who I placed for adoption, was starting to spend a lot more time with us and play music. And he turned to me and said, I think that this is a story that you need to tell. I think that you should tell this story. So he actually scored the film as well. You know, he's in the film, and I ended up taking the lead and producing it and directing it. But he was the one who really challenged me to do this film. It was his idea, not mine. Yeah. Originally.
When did you reconnect with your daughter that you gave up for adoption? How old was she?
We've always had an open adoption. So I visited them for the first time when, she was 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
And, they came, you know, we went back and forth a few times. They were at my wedding. We danced together at my wedding. I mean, I danced with my daughter at my wedding. Her whole family was there.
Wow.
And we would visit, every few years, really. But it wasn't until she came to college that we started to spend more time together. So it was, you know, when she was about 18 years old. And she has an amazing relationship with her family. I mean, she's got an incredible family.
You guys look so much alike. I remember I got distracted while I was watching it and I took a phone call and I came back and I was like, oh, this must be archival footage of you playing the guitar. And then I backed it up and I'm like, oh, that's your daughter. Oh my God. So you definitely see the resemblance there. Can you talk a little bit about, you guys are both musicians, and I like how you describe that you, it's interesting because you play the harp, which is like one of the most, an instrument that makes such beautiful and soothing music. It's like a mellifluous sort of, you know, I don't think you could have used piano music for this film. Like the harp and the strings are perfect. What was that like putting a soundtrack together? You said your husband took the lead, but did you both work on it together?
So we used a lot of the music that we've created together over the years. And then we also used a lot of the music that my daughter's band has created over the years, some of which they've all recorded here in our studio. So we used the music we already had as a base, and then that to create, you know, choral structure and use the instruments for that. But I think you're right. I think the harp, especially, he came to me with the very ending moment of it is a harp piece that he composed, actually. I think my husband's a guitarist. He plays 6-string and 12-string. And I love the way that that's impacted the harp music that I'm making now, because when I played alone, I was playing classical or Celtic stuff. And I think a lot of times the harp sounds like the harp. You expect the Nutcracker or something, yeah. You know, it's these runs, it's the magic in every movie. But he approaches the harp more like a blues guitarist. And so he's able to coax out different sounds from it that I wouldn't. So I think that's one of the great things about working with someone who comes from a totally different perspective.
It's interesting, and there's a point where you guys talk about meshing the sound of the two instruments. And the guitar, it's more bluesy or gritty, I want to say, or it's definitely more noticed, not obnoxious, but it's like you can't ignore the guitar. And I love the guitar, but it is different than the harp. And the way you guys bring it together I thought was great. You describe the music you guys make as, where is that? Baroque folk rich with hints of Appalachian balladry, Delta blues, and echoes of English folk. Where is that music being played in America? Like when you get in the big blue bus with the whole family, what kind of venues are you playing? Like outdoor festivals? That's just so unique.
Yeah, we've played a lot of different venues. We played outdoor festivals. We played, we played theaters. We play libraries a lot of the time when we tour in the summer, because we played museums. We played in the museum in Manitowoc, actually, a couple years ago.
Nice.
So, yeah, we've toured along the coast of the Inner Sea quite a bit in the past couple of years, along all the Great Lakes, because we've been doing these kind of Great Lakes sea songs. So we did a project of the shanties and sea songs specifically of the sailing era on the Great Lakes. But we do house concerts, we do outdoor festivals, we've done libraries because our kids love to stop in the middle of the day and go read books in a library while we're playing. So that's been a great fit for us.
You have, can you talk a little bit about, like, you talk about the shores of Lake Michigan? And you have a lot of, it provides a lot of very soothing sound in addition to the music, are the waves and water. And there are scenes where you're standing there pregnant or walking pregnant and you have this water. Was there a parallel, or was that intentional to draw a parallel to your pregnancy in any way?
Yeah, so when we decided, I mean, my initial idea going into it was thinking about that moment, you know, the summer after I had placed my daughter for adoption when I was 21, when I was in Sheboygan and I would walk onto the lake every night and just stand on the edge of the lake and watch the moon rise and wonder whether I was going to survive the pain that I was feeling. I just was in so much pain. This was, you know, my daughter was a month old and I couldn't imagine what the future would hold. And I felt like the lake was so beautiful that it kind of gave me a path of, you know, believing that that beauty and that trail of moonlight could lead towards something good. And then years later, after, you know, my daughter had grown up and I'd had many children of my own, and we were touring and we were in the big blue bus, and we pulled up next to one of the, we were actually on the shores of Lake Erie. And I walked down to the water And I realized that I was standing on the other side of the lake. I just had this sense of the way that the journey had arced around and brought me to this further shore. So that was the idea I had going into the movie, was kind of giving a sense of this long-term story, which of course is not finished. It's a story that's still being made. But the lakes were always a huge part of that for me as a metaphor. And then I did not plan to be pregnant at all in that shot, which I love that shot. We had this amazing cinematographer along with us. He came with us for a 2-week tour around the lakes doing a concert tour. And I had no idea when I hired him to come that I was going to be pregnant, but I think it ended up adding, you know, that I was pregnant with my 6th child while telling the story of the 6th child that my husband and I have. So my 7th child, but I was telling the story about my first. So it was, again, kind of like a long form story.
Yeah. My guest is Kate Stapleton. She made the film The Inner Sea, and it premieres, makes its world premiere at the Northern Sky Gould Theater in Fish Creek at the Door County Film Festival, February 15th, just a few weeks. So get your tickets. Where can people get tickets, Kate, if they want to check this out or for any of the films at the Door County Film Festival?
I believe so. The Door County Film Festival has a website and a Facebook page. So if you check out their Facebook page, it's got all the information about how to purchase tickets and also on their website. So Google Door County Film Festival, and I know they're selling tickets now. I know they sold out last year, so definitely get your tickets now.
Such a beautiful area for a film festival. Can you talk about a little bit about the significance of the title, The Inner Sea? And you use the word sea, like S-E-A, but it's the Great Lakes. Does that have some correlation to the pregnancy or just your inner thoughts? Where does the title come from?
Yeah, I mean, while we were doing a lot of the research on the historical songs of the Great Lakes, we were looking at, you know, the seafaring nature of them. So technically, they are inner. You don't actually have to be saltwater to be a sea, like S-E-A. And they have, you know, there's ocean-going vessels on them. I think that people don't realize, who aren't near the Great Lakes, what massive seas of water they are. But for me, it was also, I think an interior journey, and also, you know, when we're pregnant, you're holding a child within this inner sea, you know, in salt water. So there were kind of spirals, I feel like, that led me to that title.
All right. What were you hoping to accomplish? Like when you set out to do this, Kate, you have this idea, your husband pushed you into it, you directed it and produced it, and you have this great story to tell. What were you hoping came out of this and did it?
I think that one huge thing that came out of it for me was the cinematographer was on the tour bus with us the first year when he was filming, and he looked at me and said, you know, how did you survive your grief? And I felt like I didn't have an answer for him. And I think that this movie, the work of creating this movie, helped me to understand that. And so much of it was through the beauty of through music and through art, and through like a great openness. Just that was really helpful for me, but I also would love to open the conversation about adoption. I mean, I think it's not well understood. I don't think that women who place children for adoption have a voice. I've always been very aware of that. No, it's a secret thing. No one knows it happened. There's nothing to mark you to say that this happened to you. So I think that introducing that voice into the world and bringing that conversation is really something that's really important to me.
Kate, good luck with the film. Knock 'em Dead in Door County. I hope it goes over well, and very excited to catch up with you down the road and hear your music. But very interesting story, and best of luck with it.
Thank you so much. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Having me.
Thanks for joining us. All right, that's Kate Stapleton. Check out the Door County Film Festival website, Google it, and look for The Inner Sea. It's a good film. I watched it today, and it's very poignant. All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap this up and talk a little bit about the Oscar nominations. That's next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network. The difference between lovers and fakes, oh baby, I talk to you in the night, in your dream of love so true. I talk to you in the night, in your dream of love so true. In the night, in my dreams, I'm in love with you.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. On Monday, January 20th, Donald Trump returned to office, sworn in as the 47th President of the United States. Right out of the gate, he took a number of actions on his top issue, immigration. Perhaps the most troubling of these is one aiming to end birthright citizenship in America. An immigration attorney I talked to told me, "We're going to sit through a lot of BS over the course of the next weeks, months, and years, but this is the big one." My take? This action from the Trump administration is despicable, unconstitutional, and fundamentally anti-American. The day after the order was issued, Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call joined a coalition of 20 states challenging this action in court. This legal battle will be a tremendously important one for all of us to follow.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Having low income can mean making tough choices. Choosing between paying for food or medication or a place to live is a reality for many people. Do you know someone who could use some extra help? Find out about the Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI, administered by Social Security. You could receive monthly SSI payments if your income and financial resources are low and you are 65 or older, or an adult or child with a disability or who is blind. SSI is money you can use to help pay for basic needs, like putting food on the table, keeping the lights on, paying the rent. It can mean new shoes for growing feet or help with medical needs. Call 1-800-772-1213 or visit ssa.gov/SSI to schedule an appointment or start to apply today. That's ssa.gov/SSI. This message produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
We got a text from Cam. It's like, looks like a animation cell or something. He just says, "I live in squalor." I'm sorry to hear that, Cam. Thank you for texting, though. Bridget from the 818 says, "I think $10, this is in response to our question of the night, which is, at which point, if you haven't already, would you finally cancel Netflix? And tell us what you're willing to pay for streaming services or when you would cancel it." Bridget says, "I think $10 is reasonable." It all adds up quickly. It certainly does. And there are a number of streaming services that are still available for under $10. I think Peacock, I want to say Paramount, and maybe Apple TV. What is Apple TV?
Apple
like TV. $7.99 or something like that?
No, I believe it's $10.
Oh, it went and up then.
I think if it goes up again, I'd cancel it too, because there's some good stuff on there, but there's not a lot.
Yeah, I know. It's like they have 7,000 shows and like 4 you want to watch. And it's like, is it worth? But, you know, if you could get on a schedule where, like, this month I'll get Netflix and Apple and I'm going to watch everything on those two, I'll cancel them, and the next month I'll get something else. So you're only paying like $30 a month, but you're getting different streaming services per month. And you can do that. Like, there was a game on this year I wanted to watch. I got the NFL Network for 1 month. I paid $15 to watch one game, and it was worth it, because in a bar, I would have gone and spent $30 or $40. But you have to, it's hard to keep track of all that stuff. I'm not really typically that organized of a person to do that, but that is an option. Steady Eddie says, "Pete, popcorn pick of the week. Have to put Argo on my list of movies to see." You absolutely should, Steady Eddie. And he says, "Is popcorn a miracle or what? Pete, did you know that Georgia O'Keeffe was born and grew up in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin?" Yes, I did know that. I'd forgotten it, Steady Eddie, but Frank Anderson has talked about that before on this show. Thank you for the reminder. He says, "I wish I could drink pop from a bubbler." See what he did there, Conrad?
I do.
A couple Wisconsin terms, combine them into one. He says, "Imagine a cigar 9 miles long." I don't know where he was going with that one. 9 miles long. It would take you a lifetime to smoke. "Now imagine me doing the Trump weave dance to YMCA, and that's what it's all about. Good night, nightlight." Good night, Steady Eddie. Thank you for the text, buddy. Yeah, that one, that's great. So I don't know, like, these Oscar nominations, we only have a couple minutes. It was such a fun show, and Greg was such a fun guest that I didn't want to, like, we could always talk about this tomorrow, but How many of these have you seen, Conrad?
Well, not many. I've seen half of Wicked. I didn't get through it, to be honest.
Because you didn't like it, or just because you got distracted?
I don't know. I just feel like it didn't interest me as much as I thought it would.
Yeah.
You know, was Gladiator 2 in that mix? Because
no.
No, okay.
I mean, it might have been nominated for something, but not. Best Picture is Emilia Perez, 13 nominations. And I'm going to see this. This will probably be one of the movies I get to the quickest, because it's a musical that tells the story of a drug kingpin dealing with gender affirming issues. I find that fascinating. 13 nominations. In second place, Brutalist with 10 and Wicked with 10. Conclave and A Complete Unknown also drew 8 nominations. Rounding out the nominees in the Best Picture category were independent films. Nickel Boys, Anora, The Substance, which I'm kind of scared to watch. Like those pictures of Demi Moore and what The Substance supposedly does to, and it just creeped me out big time, but I will muscle through it. And then the film I'm Still Here and Dune 2 also got a Best Picture award. So you saw that one, right?
I still haven't seen Dune 2.
Oh, you haven't seen Dune 2?
No, okay. It gets to a point where I'm like, I don't know if I want to spend this much time watching a movie. I don't know. It's very long.
It is a long film. I did like it. I didn't love it as much as some people. I thought the end kind of, I don't know. It just didn't, it closed strong, but it was over the top compared to the rest of the movie, I guess. So I don't know. I'm not a big Dune fan though. I watched the first one with my son the night before, just so I wasn't lost during Dune 2. I thought it was okay, but I've seen Conclave. I'll probably watch Emilia Perez soon. I really want to see The Complete Unknown in theaters. I'm going to see that on Saturday. And then the rest of these, I can pretty much stream. Nickel Boys, I think, Anora. But some good films. And a variety. Like, you've got your blockbusters like Wicked and Dune 2. Then you've got indies like Anora, Nickel Boys, The Substance, I'm Still Here. And I did like Conclave. Emilia Perez sounds really interesting. 13 nominations. That's big. And I do want to see The Brutalist. It's not available to stream yet. I doubt it will come to the theater in Marinette. And it is about 12 hours long. So I'll have to pace myself and pack a lunch. But we'll break down some of the best actors and actresses tomorrow, supporting categories. And of course, best sound. We got to talk about that. I bet Dune 2 is up for best sound, because that film closed. It had like this really big closing, and to the point where I noticed the sound, and I remember thinking this is going to be nominated for best sound, a category I've never really paid any attention to. But some good nominees, and there's a lot in the acting categories too. We'll break that down tomorrow and talk about directors tomorrow. It is a Bar Band Friday night tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Terry Barr will be here, and we will talk to Kim Shevchik from The Doctors in Recital, and I'm trying to get my buddy Jackie Flynn on the show, who's performing at the Kenosha Comedy Club. He's a Boston comic. Hilarious. If you're in Kenosha, go see it. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. What else, Conrad? What am I forgetting?
I don't think anything.
We got it? All right. Texters, thank you very much. And that's it. We'll do it all again tomorrow night. On behalf of the lovable producer, Conrad, I am Pete Schwabe on behalf of Nightlight. Good night, Wisconsin. I'll sing it to your best friend's house, Mama.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Pat Kreitlow.
Friday morning, we'll ask our Week in Review panel to weigh in on whether the new Trump administration is on track or is already a train wreck.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Wisconsin women's basketball brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, and streaming live on the Civic Media app.
Fear you're missing out when you miss our conversations on air? You can always join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A federal judge in Washington state puts a 14-day pause on President Trump's executive order ending the 14th Amendment's so-called birthright citizenship. Judge John Kohenauer ruled quickly after 25 minutes of argument, saying the move was blatantly unconstitutional. CBS News legal analyst Jessica Levinson.
This is a judge who was appointed by President Reagan, who's saying, I'm looking at the Constitution, I'm looking at the understanding of what this constitutional language says, and no way, no how.
Fears of Trump deportations are being inflamed by threatening letters sent to farm worker groups in California.
The postcards stamped with the ICE website arrived at United Farm Workers offices across the state with the message,
Trump is here, pack your bags, which is just unbelievable.
Sandra Cincione is with ALUS, a farm worker support group. In response, she says they're holding Know Your Rights workshops